Welcome to At the Organ, a weekly show about the classical organ and its music, heard on organlive.com every Sunday or streaming from our website anytime. Just point your browser to attheorgan.com for more information. Now, let's hear what's happening this week at the organ.
Hello and welcome to At the Organ. My name is Brent Johnson. 60 years ago this week, in 1952, organist Carlo Curley was born in North Carolina. As a fan of organ music, I would be surprised if you hadn't heard the name Carlo Curley. He was the first organist to play a recital at the White House. The list of rich and famous dignitaries and celebrities with which he was able to rub elbows is impressive, yet it seemed Carlo was a friend to almost everyone he met. He was a big man, and he had a big personality to match. He was often called the Pavarotti of the organ. He had an extensive concert and recording career and made fans all over the world. Carlo Curley passed away last Saturday, August 11th, at the age of 59, at his home away from home in Leicestershire, England. The news arrived here a little too late for us to get it into our last episode, so today I'd like us to remember Carlo. I did not have the pleasure of ever meeting the man or hearing him play, so I called on some people that knew him very well. Today you'll hear the voices of Cherry Rhodes, international concert organist and adjunct professor of organ at the Thornton School of Music, University of Southern California, as well as Carlo's North American manager, Keith Pendergraft, from North Carolina, and a friend and business associate, Lee Maloney of Chicago. We start with Ms. Rhodes telling us about the first time she met Carlo.
I first met Carlo Curley when I came back from studies in Europe, and I was substituting at St. Michael's Church in New York City. I was practicing for that, and believe it or not, I was practicing Saga 6 by Jean Guillou. I don't know whether I was practicing for a recital or if I was going to play that for a postlude, but it was a weekday, and the organ is up in the balcony at Von Beckerod's organ, and I decided to play the piece in its entirety. And afterwards, I heard from the front of the church, "Bravo!" and clapping. And I thought, "Well, who is that?" And I got off the organ bench, went to the railing, and there was this tall young man, and he said, "Oh, what was that?" And I told him what it was, and he said, "Well, I've never heard anything like that before." He was so enthusiastic, and he said he was there, let in to come see the organ, and I said, "Oh, well, let me invite you up here." And he came up the stairs, and come to find out, he, after we chatted a little bit, that he was 18 years old. Well, he didn't look 18. He looked far older. Well, actually, Carlo was ageless looking to me anyway. He just always looked the same. I said, "Well, would you love to sit down and play this wonderful instrument?" And he sat down. I kid you not. He looked at the organ stops in about 3 seconds, pulled out, started playing Symphonia of Bach, and he did it kind of a la Virgil Fox with all the diminuendi and crescendi, and he did it all by hand. It was amazing. He had never seen this instrument, and here he is just pulling and pushing, and I mean, it was unbelievable. My jaw was on the floor. I couldn't believe it. Carlo had just such an amazing talent. There's just no one. He was unique. He was just amazing. Anyway, so he finished his piece, and we played some other things, and we started talking, and then we started talking in the choir room, which was right next door, because I was leading him out, and we talked for quite a while. We exchanged info, and we've been friends. I guess that means we've been friends for 41 years or something like that.
Yeah, so I met Carlo 18 years ago when he played a concert for me in North Carolina. I was selling Allen organs at that time, as most everyone was
This is Keith Pendergraft, Carlo's North American manager.
And so from that point on, we were both North Carolina boys, so I think we developed a unique relationship, a friendship. He continued to play off and on for me for probably the next 7 or 8, 9 years. And he was going through some management changes in Grand Rapids. And just very casually, I said to him, if you ever had a management change, I might be interested in doing something for you. Another year went by, and he played another concert or two for me. And one day I was sitting at my desk in Raleigh, and the phone rang, and it was him on the other end asking me if I was serious about what I said. And that led to a 9-year run of me sort of being his North American representative. He had a command of the console, both technically and physically, that you would see from very few people because of his huge stature.
And I would say that he was a very consummate musician.
This is the voice of Lee Maloney, who was with Keith the day we called, discussing Carlo's ability as an organist.
When he would come in to do a concert, he was one of the few artists I ever brought in that spent as much time concerned about the speed of the tremulant or the order of the crescendo pedal or things like that. I mean, he spent a lot of time not just setting pistons, but worrying about all the other little things on the console and getting things just right. He was really good with things like that that surprised me at first. I think that one thing that Keith and I were probably more privileged to see than the general public about Carlo was we could be standing right beside him at practice sessions before a concert or something, and he was just pounding out some big fugue or something, and just playing the heck out of it. And as he's doing it, you know, and he's drawing stops, and he's doing this, and as he's doing it, he would just be standing there talking to us and, you know, saying, well, where are we going to go for lunch, Treasure, when this is over with or something? And he is just goes right on playing. I mean, the brain that he had, the mind had to be amazing that he could be doing all that at the same time.
Carlo would address the audience, and his way with words and his infectious smile and his passion for the music and the organ would come across very strongly. He would give verbal programming, and he would have the most wonderful sense of humor, and you just couldn't help but love him. And he would sit down and just play so passionately and rhythmically. His rhythm was so fabulous and colorful. I mean, he really brought out the instrument in all its glory. And for those of you who've heard him, I'm sure you're nodding your heads right now, because he was a colorist. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. People were thrilled. The audiences were very enthusiastic. And standing ovations galore.
Carlo always said he played in every person repertoire. It was a very unique style that he inherited mostly from his former teacher, Virgil Fox. I would describe it as a very romantic style of playing, orchestral. And then I would always tell people, fill every seat in the church, because afterwards those that weren't there won't be sorry they weren't. But it was just a Carlo Curley style of organ playing, unlike anything anybody else did, and it just reached out and touched people.
He brought a lot to the layperson who didn't know about the organ. You know, people are daunted by this instrument, and they think if they don't understand it, well, they can't enjoy it. And they think that same way about music, too. You just don't have to understand everything to be able to enjoy it. Just let it sink in. But some people are afraid because they don't understand. And Carlo would give demonstration of the organ there. He brought the organ to the people. That's what he did.
One of Carlo's concert trademarks was the birdcage. Keith Pendergraft tells us about that.
Yeah, it's a little, he always called it the birds in the gilded cage. And it's it was a very small brass cage that had two little birds inside with probably, I've not been exposed to musical instruments of that type, but they were crafted with extreme detail. Their little beaks moved, their little tails fluttered. Kids, as you would imagine, were extremely drawn to it, but he would quickly shoo them away because he didn't want the bird's feathers to get plucked. But they sat right up on the organ, and you wind it up like an old clock, and at a certain point in a piece with light flute work going on, the button would get pressed, and the little birds would begin to sing, and their tail feathers would start to flutter, and of course, the audience just went bananas with the laughter. And then, quite frequently, there was a white handkerchief in his pocket or stuffed in his coat jacket, and at the end of the piece, that handkerchief would come out with one hand and quietly get draped over the bird cage. Of course, birds generally get covered up to sleep at night, but just little things like that that drew the audience in and made it something special, and people would never forget that. You would go back to somewhere that he had played before, and the first question that they asked was, where's the bird cage?
I think that there was a lot of Virgil in Carlo, not just in his technique, but in his personality. When Carlo would come out and do a concert, he would come to life. There would be an energy to him that the only other person I've ever seen exude the same energy would be Virgil. Virgil would come out and say, you know, if you come across, I'll come across, and things would start as concerts like that. And Carlo would come out, and a lot of times I think something unique about Carlo is his opening number. A lot of the concert organists start with some big bombastic piece or something, and Carlo usually started off with something very soft, maybe, you know, a dulciana and one stop and a little pedal, and he would just take you from nothing to glory and back. And I think that was one of his strongest suits, was how he could literally just take you to heaven and back all the time. Nobody could play orchestrally quite like Carlo.
I did want to say that Carlo made friends all over the world, and he kept in touch with them. It was amazing how many wonderful friends he had, and many people who loved him and were close friends. I don't know how he had the time with all his schedule, how he did this, but he did, and we all cherish his friendship so very, very much.
Oh, he had that way of, like you say, drawing people to himself, both at the organ console and away from the console, and that larger than life personality. People just wanted to be near him because he was he could be very short with people, as I think a lot of artists can, because of the life that they experience. But at the same time, there was a warmness there that people just wanted to be close to it.
He would come say things about himself that might be over the top, but he knew who he was, and he was humble, and he had a heart of gold. And sometimes it would come across in a different way, but it wasn't true, you know. Do you know what I mean?
He hung his hat in Michigan for many years, and so wherever Carlo hung his hat, he became friends with so many people that either officially or unofficially he consulted on a lot of things, or his opinion got asked. And the same thing I found happening in Raleigh, he made so many friends, because if you go somewhere and stay for a month and you're willing to get in the car and ride with anybody anywhere to talk about anything, a lot of times. His opinion got included, whether it was official or not.
You're listening to At the Organ.
Today we're remembering organist Carlo Curley, who passed away last week. And we're talking with three of his friends, Cherry Rhodes, Keith Pendergraft, and Lee Maloney.
Love to tell stories about the old days with Virgil, and going to with Virgil to these very wealthy people's homes for dinners and, you know, private concerts and things like that.
Believe it or not, Carlo had an organ position down in Atlanta, and he invited me down there shortly after we met, and so we became better friends. He introduced me to Lowell Campbell, the grand lady of the Coca-Cola company.
She was an old Southern woman, and there were stories about her getting a dishwasher and not wanting to get one because of the health.
She had an organ in her home, and she had Virgil Fox as the resident organist down there. I imagine that Virgil introduced Carlo to Flo, as we called her. Carlo having been a protege of Virgil Fox, and Carlo became her organist.
He'd be sitting on the front porch with Virgil, and they'd be talking or something, and Carlo could do a great impression of Virgil. Just drop these little tidbits of Virgil would say or something like that, and those were fun. But I also, it wasn't just a Virgil fan club meeting with Carlo. Carlo had his own fan club equally as big, and he was equally as fun as Virgil ever was.
Yeah, people would often say that after you had spent an evening with Carlo Curley, you would wake up the next morning, and your side would be hurting from laughing so hard, and your head might be hurting from the beverages partaken at the evening meal.
I think he was more popular in the UK in the last 20 years, at least, than he was over here.
He always told me that, of course, he started here in the U.S., obviously, but he also said that Virgil always told him that he needed the UK experience to complete his organ studies, and he sort of went there and never came back.
We had a lot of personal contact. Even when he went to live in England, we saw each other over there. I do have a story to tell you that is a typical Carlo Curley story. I played at Royal Festival Hall. Carlo came to the performance, and afterwards we had dinner. We had a party, and it was wonderful, a dinner party with a few friends. And Carlo was so generous with his friends. He was always wanting to pay the bill. And you could fight all you wanted to, no, he was going to do it. After this, my husband and I, Lad Thomas, piled in Carlo's car, and Carlo drove us back to the hotel. Well, all of a sudden, we hear a police siren, and the police stopped us, and Carlo was quite surprised, and he was immediately asked to take a breathalyzer test, or to walk the straight line, and of course, Carlo did it. Carlo did have some drinks, but he could hold his liquor very well, and he was by no means tipsy. So the policeman kept saying, "Well, why are you driving on this street?" And Carlo said, "Well, I've always driven on this street." And what's the problem, officer? And he said, "Well, this is not for cars." And Carlo said, "Well, I've driven this way. This must have been changed last week. I drove here even last week." And the policeman said, "Well, it's now changed for buses only. Didn't you see that sign?" And well, Carlo said, "Well, I was talking to my friend. I've always driven this for years this way." Well, anyway, the officer got a little uppity. And finally, Carlo said, "I'm very good friends with Prime Minister Heath." And he said he has invited me to give organ recitals. I've played for very important people. And you can call Prime Minister Heath and ask him about me. At which point the officer said, "Okay, be careful, drive safely, but please don't come up this street again." It was wonderful. But only Carlo could say it in such elaborate and beautifully articulated English. His English, his way of words was unbelievable, and I'm sure other people have told you this if you haven't met Charlie. Wrote me an email on July 26th. I'd like to read you a little bit. He said, I was away from Friday until Tuesday playing in Norfolk and Wales. The latter venue, St. David's Hall in Cardiff, is a much beloved instrument built by Peter Collins, an Englishman, in 1982. Ralph Down was the advisor on the job, and once it settled in, it really walked the walk and talked the talk, etc. It was a three-manual, 55-rank mechanical with an electric stop action and coupling. Thank heaven. For my sins, I opened this instrument, and to revisit the great Cornet, well, let me share that I had to use seven, and he writes this in capital letters in red, seven blues coupled from the swell and positif to accompany it in the O Mensch, the Vine. That's by Bach. What a massive, impressive, even noble stop. Noble is in caps. The tuner told me that he actually becomes off and feels ill and distressed. Distressed is in red. When tuning this register, given it is so bold, but fab all at the same time, exclamation point. The most effective 12-box, wish the positif were enclosed, and a Herculean 16-foot open wood and underpinning 32 reed, crisp, clean, and a joy to play and to hear. In parentheses, he puts, I just want you to picture a distressed organ maintenance guy. And then he put three little pictures of faces with little double horns on them. That's very funny. I thought he had gout, which he has battled with for quite a long time during his adult years. He said, I do not have gout, thanks to these two medications. It is one of the meds to which I've reacted badly. Anti-inflammatory steroids can work wonders or otherwise. He said he was getting better, but the last week of his life there, he was apparently bedridden, and then the ambulance came to get him, and when he went to the hospital, they got him up, and he took two steps, and he died right there. So I don't know. Perhaps it was his heart.
Committees and things like that, and every time I would visit the church after that meeting, one of the first things is, have you heard from Carlo? Have you talked to Carlo? Oh, we had such a great time with him. that people are still talking about him after the concert. Wherever he touched anyone, he left. You would never forget him, that's for sure.
You know, you make an impression, such a big impression like he has, and it spreads not only through the recordings, but through everyone's enjoyment of what he's brought them, and then they pass that on. Also, the people that he's touched personally, with such a sense of humor that he had, he had a, you know, even in this email, it's filled with humor. He says, well, first of all, I don't know, it was sort of like almost like a goodbye letter to me. I mean, he said, you have no idea how grateful I am for our long, solid, and enduring friendship. It means more than you can ever know, and that we can all have a darned fab giggle over what life sends our way, warts, hiccups, and all. Humor saves everything, I fully believe. You can see, I mean, even in his very, very sick days, he had this wonderful humor. And I mean, he's so right about humor being the joy of life and helping you through. And we're going to remember that from him. His wonderful humor, no matter what happens, no matter, I mean, Carlo confided it to me in lots of ways. And you know, I've known him since he was 18. He had his ups and downs and his loves and the heartbreaks and, you know, life. And he always kept his humor. That's a wonderful lesson for us all to have.
He was just a one-of-a-kind person. I must have had 300 or 400 emails in the last few days and equally that many phone calls. But he was just a person that touched the life of everybody that he met in one way or another. And it's funny, I was talking to someone just the other day, and I said, who would be the next Carlo Curley? And the gentleman that I was talking to said, Keith, I really think Carlo is the end of an era. And it just goes to show the kind of person he was. He had developed his own style of playing, unique to him. He didn't really care what other musicians thought. Some loved it, some criticized it, but at the end of the day, it was him, it was who he was, and people were drawn to it, and they loved it, and it'll be something that'll be sorely missed.
Thank you for joining us today. Our special thanks go to Cherry Rhodes, Keith Pendergraft, and Lee Maloney for their time and sharing their memories of Carlo Curley with us. Our thanks also go to John Dill and Burton Tidwell for their assistance in helping put this show together. I hope you'll join us for our next episode of At the Organ. Until then, you can find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Links are on our website, attheorgan.com. My name is Brent Johnson, and I'll meet you here next week at The Organ.
You've been listening to At the Organ, a weekly look at the art and music of the classical organ. We'd love to hear your comments about the show. Send your email to info@attheorgan.com or just go to our website where you can comment on the show. There you can also hear this week's show again or find back episodes. The address is attheorgan.com. At the Organ is a production of the Organ Media Foundation. For more information about supporting the foundation or sponsoring an episode of At the Organ, go to organmedia.org. Thank you for listening, and we'll meet you here next week at the Organ.